Welcome along to a very special edition of View from the Terraces. It is an all-family affair, and with that maybe some strong language. We'll try and keep it down, though. And also, there will be a lot of commentary regarding what happened just the other day in that FA Cup game. So because of that, there may be definitely some explicit language involved. But without further ado, we will get started. So sit back, relax, and hopefully you'll enjoy this next hour of footy chat during this international break. Welcome along to another special episode of View from the Terraces. It is pod 30, and because of that milestone, like I said, in that language warning, it is an all-family affair. Age before beauty, though. We've got my dad, Steve. He's on the pod this week. Good to see you, Dad.
All right, Tech.
And we've also got my brother, Connor.
You all right, Tech?
Yeah, doing all right.
Seeing you,
yeah? Yeah. I mean, We were watching the game yesterday, which we'll get onto a little bit later on in the pod.
You have to.
There'll be some people who definitely want to be hearing about us talking about that. But age before beauty, your first memories of football, Dads. This is our second time recording where I flubbed the first time me saying that. It was been 40 years in which my dad started watching football. It's around about 50.
Well, it's about 50, 51, I'd say.
And yeah. Your first game was?
Was a night game against Crystal Palace. It must have been 1972 or 73. And my most memorable thing of that game, we did win. I can't remember the score. I was too excited. But Alan Whittle was playing for Crystal Palace, and Alan Whittle had played for Everton the season before. He was an albino guy. Yeah. And I just remember him getting, every time he got the ball, the word wanker, which was the first time I'd heard the word wanker. I had to ask my dad what that was all about, and I can't remember what he told me, but it probably wasn't the true definition.
That's very similar to my first game, which was the Liverpool-Sunderland 2-2 game when I heard Glenn Johnson being called a prick by the fellow who's in front of us on the cop. And I just thought, this is fantastic. This is brilliant, even though we've got a terrible side.
But he does have a degree in maths.
He does, yeah. He's got his own interior decorating firm as well, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, he hasn't.
What was he doing for playing full back for us? And Connor, what was your first game?
Oh, first game. I think it was... It might have been the FA Cup derby against Everton where Curtis Jones, was it FA Cup where Curtis Jones scored that screamer from outside the box? I think it was that one. There might have been a game or two before that one. It's difficult to remember. That one's certainly sat in my brain, not just because of Curtis Jones, but Speedo Mick made an appearance and did a lap around the ground, which was great. I was in front row seats and got to see Speedo Mick.
In all his glory.
In all his glory, yeah.
Was he in his Speedos at the match?
Yeah, I think they might have even been pink Speedos. They might not have been blue. There might have been another agenda for the colour.
Bloody hell.
But he done the lap around the pitch, and then he also ran on the grass, and the stewards weren't happy about that because he was not allowed to walk on the pitch. Actually on the pitch before the game, obviously because they maintained it and made it nice for the derby, and he ran on it, and the few of the stewards, a few of the staff got a little bit annoyed, came over, said a few things, and that was it. But other than that game, I can't, maybe one or two before that, on a few friends' different seekers and tickets, but no.
Maybe it wasn't Speedo Mick though. Maybe the reason, maybe it was just a streaker who just decided to invade the pitch on the day.
Imagine if it was the old days with the Merseyside police dog handlers.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Before the derby,
we're gonna talk about on the pod this week some of the things in terms of the match day going experience that we sort of lack in. And my dad said in the week he regaled us on the stories of in the past Merseyside police would do this sort of thing at half time in the derbies of saying, yeah, this is what we've got in terms of how fit our dogs are, and then there would be a sort of activity that we would put on at half time.
Yeah, there'd be a guy who'd just like leg on the pitch, and you'd think there was just a pitch invasion happening, and it was a loony. And then they'd set the dogs on him. And then I think it was Billy Butler, who's a DJ. The older listeners will remember Billy Butler was a DJ on Radio Merseyside. He used to do the halftime and the pre-match George spot, with the, and then he'd come on and go, you know, tell you like it was the the police dog
exhibition.
Whereas you would really thought this fellow was getting torn to ribbons in front of you.
Did he have to just? Did he have just like the protective grip on? Did he?
He had a thing on his arm. Which you know when you know it was obviously a lot thicker than, than the other side.
That's what I was thinking. He must have looked like he was built like a brick shit house.
But it was. He'd just run out, get to the centre circle, the police, and you'd think he's a nutter, and then they'd let a dog go, and you'd think that's a bit much, and the dog would wrestle him to the ground, and then Billy Butler would come on and go, oh, it's all right, kids.
Whilst all the adults in the crowd are screaming and cheering. Oh,
I remember thinking, like, you know, how far are the grounds apart? That's a world apart, isn't it? Could you ever imagine that on an Anfield?
I think you spoke about that being one of your first, when you went to it for the first time, you genuinely did think, oh my God.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of thinking, oh yeah, this is an organised thing.
Yeah. And the funny thing was like, my dad hated derbies. And like, I think as you get older, you realise why. But my dad hated derbies because it was all we wanted with the points, because we were actually trying to win something, whereas the Evertonians just wanted to disrupt your season. But because he hadn't explained that to me, and at the age of 10, I probably wouldn't have understood it anyway. So when I saw this dog attacking like a young person, I thought, no wonder he doesn't want to come here. No wonder he hates derbies.
All the things that happen back in the day that don't really happen these days. I mentioned about how the Toffee Girl at Everton doesn't lash a load of toffees into the crowd. And then that brought Connor in talking about a story that happened way back in the day with the Snickers bars, where probably Dad, your better position saying this, where there would be a fella who you'd want to buy a chocolate from, and it wouldn't be like a concession stand. It would be a bloke and he'd just lob you a chocolate.
He'd just walk down round the track, you know, the little cinder track.
Yeah, yeah.
You just walk around with like you know when you go to the pitches and they have like the
old style little tray that hangs off. Yeah.
And like, you know, generally people would ask for bits and pieces who were sitting in the front or standing in the front part. But then there'd be like a smart ass who'd go, I want a Mars bar. But he'd be like in the middle of the cop and he'd put his hand up and like, you know, if you want one, you're going to get one. And he'd throw his money down and try and hit the guy on the head with like a 50 pence or something. And then he'd have to return, as soon as he'd like got the money, he had to return it with a Mars bar. And then it got a bit silly because people were asking for them further and further away as a bit of a challenge to the guy. And he'd have to put his tray down and take a run up. And that was quite funny.
Did he ever find that he had to hail change across the...
There was a bit of that. I think as a kid, when you haven't got all the previous, have you? So you're just seeing it for what it is.
Yeah.
You just accept that that's the way it is. But I think in the end, they stopped it because it was getting a bit silly.
Yeah.
Mm.
But I mean, imagine if you got hit by a Mars bar.
Well, they could bring it back now because the Mars bars are smaller back then. Yeah, noticeably, yeah. The Mars bars were bigger, weren't they?
You could get a big one.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
An extra 10%. You know.
Snickers duo being thrown across the...
You're like a mattress.
Well, it's like throwing nunchucks, isn't it, into a crowd. You could...
Take some eye out.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a story that Johnny said about how there was a bloke who went on a night out with who it was a Leeds game that was being played. And I think they were in the away end. And Johnny said that this bloke said he brought in a pie and he thought, oh, you're bringing it for half time? Something to be said. No. There's always one fella that you want to guess. And then at half time, he went, watch this. Screwed the top off the pie and launched it at some bald fella's head who was like being horrible in the game. The gravy and mesh just poured down his big fat head. But yeah, that some of the things that happened back in the day, I guess.
At least he's nice enough to have let it cool down. You know, we all know that how hot the pies can be in Anfield. If you buy one of them,
30-degree burns.
Yeah, before the first half, and throw it before the first half's over, you could be seriously hurting someone. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's enough laughs now because we're gonna have to.
Aren't we going to talk about cushions?
Oh, yeah, we've got about that. So Everton used to have something back in the day with regards to cushions and how when discontent would happen during the match, much like how the Madridians of Real Madrid would wave their white handkerchiefs, they would have an exercise with that, wouldn't they, Dad?
Well, this is it, and I don't want to... It's not an urban myth. This actually happened, and it happened more than once. So it's the upper tier. I don't know whether it was because it was a bit colder up there, but you got a complimentary cushion, which was like a little pad that you had on your seat. And when to air their discontent at whatever was going on, these would rain down. And whenever the Evertonians talk about, you know, the saintly terms of Howard Kendall, I just remind them that they showered him with cushions, and I don't think it was complimentary.
So was
although
this...
the cushions were.
So was it the north stand of Goodison that
it's
was
the
doing
main
it?
Stand? You did like you don't want the multi-tiered one,
and the one presumably where the dugouts were literally underneath.
Yeah, yeah. Because it was quite funny because I'm not sure if you're keen to. To confirm this, I'm sure it was in the Echo.
I mean, every time that I bring this up, to especially Dave and Dave's parents, they just say, oh, that never happened. And yeah,
well, he would, wouldn't he?
Well, yeah.
It's not also whether you can buy one of the cushions as a piece of memorabilia off the internet. I'm fairly certain someone... I mean, they've got rid of them, haven't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Because every week someone's job was taking them from the lower tier back to the upper tier.
I mean, you do deny things because you don't want to face the reality. I mean, I don't want to face the reality of the crowd chanting for Rodgers, you know, because although I did tell them off.
This is when Brendan Rodgers' name was being sung, and it was, I remember specifically the game. It was Wigan at Anfield. I think we battered them like 4-0. I think Jose Enrique scored on the day, which tells you everything that you need to know about Wigan at the time. And there was my dad and I were sat in the Annie Road end, which always has a bit of a pickle when it comes down to certain supporters from a Liverpool standpoint. And there was just a bloke who just started singing Brendan Rodgers' name. And then my dad mumbled it under his breath.
I said, it's a bit early for all that.
Yeah.
And then they went a bit potty, didn't they?
There was a guy next to you.
Am I dissing Brendan?
Yeah. He really wasn't happy, and he did have a bit of a scowl on for the rest of the game. And you know, it's come back that you were completely right in the end.
Well, this is it, but, you know, you don't want to remember that the crowd had time for that insane loser.
Yeah.
He's a beautiful man.
If you can't tell, my dad's not very keen on
him. He's insane, isn't he?
You know what, that Be in Liverpool documentary that we had at the time. I watched that quite recently. It's
with his envelope.
Oh yeah. The one thing that you pick out out of that a lot, and I guess we will talk about Michael Edwards and, you know, Richard Hughes a bit later on in the pod, is that the CEO of the time, Ian Eyre, was the biggest bellend doing things like talking about how he loved riding his Harley Davidson around the Dock Road.
They filmed him, didn't they, on the Dock Road?
They did, yeah.
In his pudding base in Elbeth.
Yeah, and then when they were going to assign Joe Allen a number, they said, I think Brendan said, so what number do you want, Joe? And Ian Eyre in the background corridor just went 69, and then they and they all cacked themselves. They were loving it.
Oh, that's a classic.
Well, it was just that envelope thing always makes me laugh, because he says, you know, in here I've got the name of someone who's going to let us down. knowing what happened, he's going to open it and it's going to be Brendan Rodgers.
It was three envelopes, and people joked that he had Joe Cole's name in every single one of the envelopes.
It had Joe in one, Cole.
So, yeah. Anyway, yes, we should get into what we are going to be talking about, and there'll be a little of a conversation about the Champions League, but the first thing I think that we should be talking about is a cup competition that we are no longer in. Yesterday, we lost to Manchester United 4-3. What do you make of that?
It's all our own doing. It's our fault, I guess, isn't it? But, you know, we wanted the quadruple. it would have been something, you know, something that's never happened before, and unfortunately we've not got it. But as we said yesterday, there's more to focus on. The season's still got lots left to win, and arguably with now potentially more injuries which have come out, a more congested schedule was only going to make things harder for the competitions we actually care about, that being the Europa League and the Premier League. So maybe being out of this isn't the worst case scenario, although it is sad, definitely. Very raw, sad.
You were saying after the game, Dad, about how the one that you wanted to not lose is the game that we play at Old Trafford in the Premier League, and this one that we lost in the FA Cup, in the grand scheme of things.
I'd take that. I'd take us getting knocked out. I mean, if you look at it in the cold light of day, nobody wants to get beaten, get knocked out of a cup competition that you want to win, because there's no way back. You're out. That's that.
Especially by one of your greatest rivals.
Then it's definitely one of your greatest rivals, and you know the reaction to it will be over the top because that's all they've got. Good thing that's probably cemented Ten Hag in his job. There could have been a knee-jerk reaction. They could have got rid of him and had a temporary manager until the end of the season. Or they could have said, well, that's that. To be honest, I hope they go on and win the FA Cup and keep him because he's a complete loser.
You're not a fan of Ten Hag, are you?
I think he's garbage. I think he's got no redeemable things about him. I don't think he understands what he's doing. I don't think he's got a style. He'll irritate the life out the Man United fans because they want to play super attacking football, and he's going to consolidate, you know, and not give them that. The longer he's in a job at Man U, the better for Liverpool, because he's useless and they'll not really amount to much.
I think his track record on transfers as well has also been really, really poor.
Yeah,
it's been comical.
I mean, it's very disappointing that the guy who gets the equalizers, Antony of all fucking players, who is dreadful. And when you look across the game, I think the reason why it was so raw and it hurt so much is we were just so much the better team on the day.
Yeah, it's the way in which we lost it, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it all being from our own mistakes, you know, our own demise, if you will. And I think probably something maybe we don't like to say, but definitely Klopp's poor substitution decisions. Mm. You know, just sometimes we watch them do it and we scratch our heads, don't we? And go, why did he do that? It just doesn't make sense. And I think, you know, the point at which we do them, the way in which the goals then came, very, very unfortunate. Maybe he was just playing for those penalties at the end of the day and hoping that was maybe going to be it for us. But yeah, it's really, really, really disappointing, isn't it?
Yeah. We had it totally in our hands in the second half.
Oh, yeah.
And I think you said it, Dec, when we were watching the matches, like we were playing with our food. We knew we had them. We could do, we were doing whatever we wanted to do. There was no real threat for loads of time in the second half, and one more goal would have done it.
Yeah.
But we didn't do it. And I think if it was Klopp, you know, it's annoying that there's an international break, because I'd be ramming that down their throats in training every day. You've blown that. Yeah. So you're going to blow everything else, you know, but they'll all go away, calm down now. But yeah, disappointing. I think... going to Old Trafford and getting a result is always hard, no matter how rubbish United are. But I think we all said it, didn't we? God, they're rubbish. They are rubbish.
Yeah, there was lots of moments in the game where you could see that there was a lack of quality. And I know, you know, there will be a United supporter listening and will be going, well, you got beat by that lack of quality. But I don't think you can take away, as a United supporter, a lot of redeeming qualities from that game, a lot of things that you go, wow, he played phenomenal, he played really well. I see more of that from our side. We can take away a lot of really good things, you know. Individual performances were fantastic. I think other than that, you know, a little bit that Darwin did at the end, which led to the goal, he was great throughout the entire game. And I think at the end of the game, you could only just see that we were just leggy. We just were tired, and that was potentially the reason we had a lack of threat, you know. Gapco wasn't great. I think every Liverpool supporter is despising him currently. It feels like, you know, when we hated Gomez at the end of last season, it feels like that hatred's been retargeted at poor Gapko. And I don't necessarily think it's 100% right. I do think he's got some redeemable qualities about him. I just think he's struggling to fit in the side currently.
We've got, you know, a lot of forward players who have been in and out the side. Salah's definitely looked yesterday as if he was so out of rhythm, so out of fitness. Yeah. We didn't have Jota. I thought Jota would, at Old Trafford, would absolutely muller the likes of Manchester United. And then when you look at the way that Gakpo played, he's got that sort of performance in him, which is a bit of a worrying factor. You don't want that sort of thing attributed to the likes of him, because when you look at the career that Firmino had at Liverpool, whilst he wouldn't score in matches, he would affect play and he would bring players into the match. And Gakpo did the opposite. He closed himself out. He man-marked himself at times. And that's why it was very disappointing from him when he was brought on. We needed a difference changer, and he actually made the difference in the wrong capacity. He was actually doing well for Manchester United instead of for us.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So, you know, I'm not going to hide the fact that it's very disappointing to lose that game. But when you look at the fact that we still have the Europa League and we still have a shot at winning the Premier League, that it does seem as if the way that the Champions League draws, you'll notice the segue, is gone. It makes it quite interesting the way that it's all going to pan out, as Arsenal have a tricky draw against Bayern Munich. We're not really sure how that's sort of going to go, but Manchester City have to play Real Madrid. They are probably the two toughest teams that you can play right now.
Two favourites, aren't they? One after another, yeah.
And then whatever happens from those two ties, if Arsenal or Man City win, if they beat their opposition, they both face each other in the Champions League. I think that that's hugely dangerous to their title hopes for both those teams.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
yeah.
Yeah. It makes you, I mean, instinctively, you want them both to go out in the next round, don't you? But if you're thinking about it from a tactical point of view for our season, it's best they stay in it for the course,
yeah,
the full course. And especially because City won it last year, Pep will want to cement this as like, City are now a pucker Champions League team, and Arsenal have never won it. So it's incredibly important to them. And Mikel Arteta, God knows that man wants to be a legend at something.
Yeah.
So I do think it's...
Legend to sound bites. Yeah. It's a disgrace.
So I think you're right, Dec. I think, you know, if they both go through, and let's hope the games take everything out of them.
Extra time, penalties, yeah,
yeah,
a lot.
Yeah. I think City had a really great one last year, didn't they? That took them to the very end. Who was it they had all the beef with last year? It might have been
Atletico.
Atletico it was, yeah. It was, yes. Simeone, didn't it?
Yeah, there was all sorts.
His normal big enough the
yeah. I think Grealish scored, didn't he?
Yeah. And then there was a scuffle, wasn't there? There was a bit
big
of a fight
afterwards.
And he was getting
pelters from the crowd saying he was abused.
Yeah. Which he is.
And all that being said, I think we feel as though with Manchester City, the sooner that they can get knocked out, the better, because, you know, God knows if they're still the favourite, aren't they?
Yeah.
So if they get through Real Madrid, you probably think that their name is close to getting onto the trophy.
And you've got a chance against Madrid over two legs.
Yeah.
It's the one off game that they've got a bit of a hoodoo.
Yeah, well, that's us, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think if Real Madrid get through and if Arsenal get through, I think Real Madrid will go on to win the whole thing.
Because definitely.
I think over two legs, Arsenal won't be able to get anything out of Madrid.
No, not with everything they've got going on, you know, domestically as well. I think there's just so much, isn't there, in their schedule, so much requirement for the team as well. We're great. They've had some amazing performances recently. Some of the best scorelines we've seen in years, you know, takes us back to some of the scorelines we've had over the years, seeing them blow teams out the water. But you always ask the question, how long do they keep that up? You know, how far do you go physically whilst maintaining all these other competitions as well? And Champions League is the hardest. You know, the two legs is just so difficult. Travelling and then performing and then coming back and having to play again on the weekend. It's just tough, isn't it? So we want them both to stay in, definitely, as long as possible, as much as it kills me to say that. But yeah.
If Arsenal got to a Champions League final, it would feel quite horrible thinking, oh God, we're basically trying to fingers cross it and hope that they don't win. And when you see the other side of the Champions League draw, you think that whoever does get to that final out of the side that is from Arsenal and Manchester City, that it should be relatively straightforward. The only team that seems very on good form is Paris Saint-Germain, and that is really saying something given the fact that Kylian Mbappe is obviously losing. There is a bit of a story, I guess, maybe in that, and the fact that this is Mbappe's last season at Paris Saint-Germain, could be something that he's trying to do. But you look at it at the end of the day, there's a reason why he's leaving, and it's because the side isn't very good. And when you look at all the other teams that are in that other side of the draw, Barcelona are probably the only other team, and Xavi's also leaving Barca. So I think there are narratives in place.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But the one that I think is possibly underestimated so far is what's going on with Carlo Ancelotti, because his future is very uncertain right now. I know that you mentioned it previously, Dad, to me, about how you wonder what Xabi Alonso is going to do with relation to that Carlo's right now. I mean, is he going to die in office, for God's sakes? You know, he's been there a long time. It could be a possibility that Florentino Perez, brand new stadium, he's thinking new attractive young manager, do they just go in for Xabi and this is Carlo's swan song, essentially?
Yeah, I mean, that's when we started, or when Jürgen made his statement and we started to think about, you know, the potential for Xabi Alonso to replace him, that was the danger for me, because Ancelotti's got retirement written all over him. I mean, if he wins, it's a swan song. He'll retreat into the sunset. If he loses, it's an excuse to change your manager. Whatever happens, I think he'll go.
Either way, there's an exit strategy, isn't there? And it's a reason to potentially sign someone. You've just got to hope that Xavi, being a younger manager, new to the scene, will he want to just immediately go into Real? Will he want to have that as that move directly, or will he want to potentially move into something where he does have to build, does want to add and create new additions? Arguably, you get Real, it's like getting flat pack furniture, isn't it? It's already created. You've just got to effectively mould what's in front of you into a different project, but it's effectively already there. Whereas with us, we have got a lot of great players, but there's still a bit of direction needed, isn't there? You can see that with the last season and this season, whole new midfield. We're still looking for a way to make everything work, especially if you take in consideration injuries and stuff as well. So you've got to hope that he's got that and he maybe looks at it. I'm sure he will, you know, think, I can't just make that decision and jump straight to there. But money talks at the end of the day, doesn't it?
And you look at the young players that they've still got at Real Madrid. Obviously, you've got Jude Bellingham, of course.
Yeah.
Vinicius Junior is still relatively young and arguably the best winger in world football right now. Rodrigo's still there. They've got rid of a lot of the old players with Karim Benzema leaving. And it does seem as if with the fact that they're bringing in Mbappe, they've got a forward line that will rival anyone in Europe right now. So there is a lot there possibly at stake to bring in a new manager and do all of this. And that will become more apparent as sort of the weeks and months follow. But I guess the last sort of point on the Champions League that I do want to sort of talk about is with regards to this is the last of this iteration of the Champions League. The new format is going to take place in the new year. New footballing year, and this goes by this Swiss model, and it took Johnny a while to understand it. It took me a little while to understand it, and Dave's not going to be in it, so he probably doesn't need to understand it anyway. So when it comes down to, did you like that one? So when it comes down to the Champions League, my sort of understanding of the history of the Champions League is that when it was the old European Cup, it wasn't even structured like this anyway. No. And when it was the old style of European Cup, it was the winners across all of the leagues in Europe.
No one was seeded.
And when it was changed from the European Cup format to the Champions League, how much of a sort of furore came from all of that?
Not much, I seem to remember, because it was always, like, I mean, when you think about it, Liverpool won the competition in its old format four times. So we won it four times in its old format. And then, and that was a strict cup competition. And we should have won it six times, but we had a unfortunate, like there was, we just got Grobbelaar, and Grobbelaar screwed up again. I can't remember, it was against East European opposition. But we should have won it more, but it was a strict cup competition, names in the hat, no seeds. You know, play whoever comes out. And then when it changed to the newer format, to be honest, Liverpool weren't a force anymore in Europe. So it kind of passed us by, but there wasn't a great deal of... I think it was... I remember the only comment from Liverpoolians was, well, it's not a champions competition anymore because the champions aren't necessarily going to win it. So because you were picking the second and third, fourth in some cases. So there was that comment, but actually when you almost from day one, the quality of the competition was much better.
Yeah, I could imagine.
You know, and
that.
I remember thinking that, you know, when we played we were fortunate to win the UEFA Cup and then go into the European Cup. And it always felt to me as though the UEFA Cup, because you were playing nearly champions and it was a longer competition and the final was over two legs, it always felt a bit more difficult to win the UEFA Cup than the old Champions League. So I think it coming together in the way it did, I thought was a really good, it was a really good competition. And you'd always, and the eagerness to change, you always resist that because nobody really likes change. And it's been a good competition. But this change seems to be crazy. I mean, when they actually timed how long it took to draw in a traditional way, it was something like 4.5 hours. They've had to get a computer simulation program to help them and support the draw. I mean, it just feels overcomplicated to me.
When you think it is just supposed to be drawing lots to play teams. Yeah. And
it, you just don't trust... Well, you don't trust the motives, do you? Is this all about money? Where, you know, where everything ultimately is in football.
Yeah.
This seems blatant. More games. You can forget about your European Super League now. So you know.
Well, I think this is it, isn't it? I think that's what this has been geared for. Yeah, I think money is certainly the motive. You know, we're not blind to the fact that this is exactly why they've done it. It's distribution of wealth amongst more teams. It's fair. I think that's probably the tagline they're going for. It's fairer to have it this way across people. Whereas, like, I think what you said there about where they thought originally it isn't the champions competition anymore. Well, it certainly fucking isn't anymore, is it?
No.
We're inviting everybody into it. Anyone can play. Yeah. You know, respective clubs from a certain country, you do well in your own domestic leagues. Oh, we'll give you another spot. Why not? You know, it does feel like it may be edging away from that. Could it be they do it this way and it's to potentially force clubs' hand to make another competition, which is for the champions, for a more entertaining value? Oh, well, we've got this one. You don't like that anymore. We ruined it. Maybe we make another one. A lot of speculation that could be made around that maybe, but it certainly does feel money-driven, and I'm not entirely keen on it myself. Listening to the pod with you and Johnny on trying to figure it out, I've listened to bits of it back a few times and thought, I just don't fucking get it. I think it's more, you struggle to not understand it because you just don't get why they're doing it.
And when you listen to what the rhetoric is from the likes of UEFA, the feeling that you get, especially from Seferin, who is right now actually leaving UEFA, and there's going to be an election just as they're about to announce a new format of the Champions League.
Well, you never see him and Ten Hag in the same room, do you?
And he's leaving, and there'll be a new head of UEFA, and they'll have a very tough job of trying to bring everyone together if this format doesn't work. But the feeling that we've been getting from UEFA has been that of the current state of the Champions League doesn't feel competitive enough. And in that respect, I kind of do see where they're coming from, because the group stages, for a long, long time, people have said there is no competition. You sort of know who's going through, unless it's Manchester United. Allow me that one. You know, it's been a hard weekend. But all of the other teams, you know Bayern Munich are getting through, you know Man City are getting through, you know Real Madrid are getting through. So they're trying to introduce this in a way to make it a little bit more appealing. But are you really, when I understand that the top eight teams in this Swiss model league will immediately qualify for the knockouts, but all of the playoffs that I'll have to take on afterwards means that you, I think we said in the lead up to this, that it's going to be 10 games before a knockout game is played if you end up in the playoffs, compared to what normally happens is where you play six if you're in the normal group stages. So 10 matches if you are unlucky enough to not get yourself into the position or get into the knockouts through that straight shot through. And that could be decided on things like goal difference and things like that. And that is really where it's called into huge question, because they want to introduce more teams in it, but they want to introduce them from, you know, federations that have really low quality. So if Man City get drawn up against Ludogorets and pump them 20-0 over over one leg, because you don't play the same team twice, another reason why this format's very weird. Mm. If they play them at the Etihad and score 12 goals, and then they find, oh yeah, well, they're going to get through on goal difference, and all the other teams, they aren't drawn to get up against like all these champions of lower federations, then it just makes it so much more unappealing, really, all the Swiss model league style. I mean, the knockouts will still be the knockouts, and we'll see how that sort of works out, but it does feel very, very peculiar, and we'll just have to see how it goes. I do feel as if there'll be more matches, but the quality will still be as poor as it always is for the group stages.
I think you're right. And I think if you go, I mean, I'm not, you know, as you get older, you don't catalogue things in your head in the same way. You know, each year is, I'm sure for you guys, each year you remember precisely the route to the final, for, you know, but I don't. But when you said then there's, you'd always know what teams are going to get through. Well, you do, but there's always a couple of teams that have a crop of players that make him an impact in the Champions League. At Atalanta, they did it, and I think one of the Red Bull team, I can't remember. But there's always like a clutch of players that matured at the same time and have a good run and a good go. And they're not going to win it, but they do something.
And the disruptors, aren't they?
Yeah, it either sets a platform for the next season when they're going to go on and do something, or it's a big marketplace for the players that make it.
You think of Salzburg.
That's it, Salzburg.
When they had Minamino and Haaland, and then you look at Leipzig getting themselves to the quarters of the Champions League. And
they had phenomenal, didn't they, season?
They've had the likes of Naby Keita. it goes to show that there are then teams that do put their players on the marketplace.
Yeah. And I think that's a... That will be lost in the swarm of fixtures, I think. So that's a positive thing. But the trick, I guess, in all of this is when they moved it from being a cup to a league, that's that's when the idea of it being a cup competition sort of went, didn't it? Because if you're going to have a league, and then what they've done is they've said, you like the league, we're going to make the league more competitive. And it just doesn't feel like that. I think it is a bit of a drug, the Champions League. I think we all like it as the competition. It's our favourite competition.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And I think, you know, old timers like me will always say, you know, you need to win the league, you need to win your domestic league, and that is very important. But as an entity, the Champions League is a great product, and it looks like they're messing it messing with it too much.
I think all of the things with regards to the Champions League, which I've, you know, talked about at length sort of on this show, is the best memories I always have in football have always been Champions League. It's always been the European final days. And even the ones that we've lost, you know, the days themselves are always so brilliant. And then it's just marred by the fact that we get beat. But that game that we played against Spurs, I don't think about how terrible the game is, because I just think of how amazing the day was and celebrating it long into the night. Hopefully we get those days back next season, although it may be that this year when we go to Dublin, if we do end up getting to the Europa League final, fucking hell, that'll be quite the day out if we do end up getting all the way there. I guess really, onto the sort of last stages of the podcast, we should talk about the run-in really and where we sort of are with regards to the international break. In fact, first and foremost, how excited are you for this international break? England, you know?
Oh, yeah, can't
wait. Did you get to wear the new kit?
Yeah. Is there a new kit?
Yeah. I think there is, yeah.
It's launched today, I think.
Oh, really? I'll have to see some Jordan Henderson pictures of it, definitely. Has he got any LGBT markings on it? Oh, it doesn't matter anymore. He's in a country it's quite all right with.
So you're not excited for this international breakup now?
Oh, it's just garbage, isn't it? I mean,
are friendlies as well. They're not playing for anything.
It's funny. I think I speak for everyone in this room. We're not interested in international football, but where they lost it for me, international football, I used to love the World Cup. And even the Euros, it was an extension of the season. You know, you'd have a bit of football in the summer.
Yeah.
And that was good.
I quite like the World Cup.
I like the World Cup. I think in the last couple of years where the schedule's a bit iffy, it isn't great, is it?
No.
But everyone's got to be involved. And regardless of where it's hosted and whether or not you agree politically with these things, it is football at the end of the day. It is entertaining at a point of the year where television is garbage. So, you know, it's something else to do, isn't it?
I've always just seen the Euros as just a poor man's version of the World Cup, really. You know, when you have, you know, dross sides that are competing, but there are dross sides in the World Cup as well. But I enjoy, you know, the carnival of football, to use a cliche, but using these international breaks of saying, oh, it's going to be the last chance that you get to see these lads shape up before they go to the international competition. Yeah, it's a fucking friendly. Why don't you just watch the competition?
Who are we going to pump? Who's the?
Well, they've got to play against Brazil for one of them.
Oh, have they?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, we could get pumped in that one.
I'd love to see Jordan Henderson play against Brazil. I mean, that'd be great, but I want to see him play against Brazil for all the wrong reasons.
Well, the other thing in the old days, and I think England got a lot. So England won the World Cup. Then they should have won the World Cup in 1970.
Yeah.
And we threw it away against Germany. Then we didn't qualify in 74, 78. And Scotland did. So the BBC, because it was on the BBC and ITV, they're a national broadcaster. They said, look, for all you England fans, you're going to support Scotland. So imagine that now. So that was I just wanted England to qualify. So I don't think everyone was anti-England in the old days, because we just wanted England to qualify. But then when we did qualify and we were really crap, when we got to 82, we didn't qualify 74, 78, we qualified 82, it was in Spain. So there's loads of expats and England supporters over there. Yeah. We won the first game against France, 3-1. And I think Brian Robson scored the quickest international goal ever in the World Cup. And then we went on to get out the group, and then got knocked out by, I think we got knocked out by Spain, actually. I'm not sure. But, oh no, we didn't. Who did we get knocked out by? Can't remember. But that was kind of, people wanted England to do quite well. And then it went through the 80s into the 90s, and then we had Italia 90.
Yeah.
And so I don't think people were always anti the international setup and internationals. I think gradually it got more popular. And then
since the Premier League,
it's become a nothing. It's not important to anyone anymore.
We always say to each other, I
you don't want your players getting injured, do you?
Well, yeah, there's that. And I can't bear half of the squad most of the year. So then going to the summertime, it's like, oh, am I going to cheer on Jack Grealish? No, I'm fucking not. I don't want to. I don't feel as though he deserves any of my attention. I don't think half of them do. And then the players which you do want in your own team, great. I'd love some of them to have a great performance. Even like the likes of, you know, we bought Gapco, didn't we, this year? And he had a great performance in the World Cup, didn't he? He was phenomenal. And, you know, maybe you look at it and go, well, some of my players in my team actually maybe not been great recently, but they might have a great World Cup and their value could could go up significantly. Yeah. Some sales could possibly happen because of that. It doesn't happen for us very often. But, yeah, there is a general lack of excitement for it. And I think it's probably around the fact that I just don't like half of the team.
No, that's true.
I don't like Gareth Southgate. Maybe if we had a different manager, someone who was a little bit more energetic, I'd enjoy it. You know, if I was German and Klopp was my manager, I think that'd be fucking great, wouldn't it? Yeah. Maybe we're just supporting the wrong national side. Maybe we should defect.
I have defected. I spoke
Irish. You do. And I agree with you on that. You know, we're all a bit Irish in this room. So yeah. I think supporting them is great.
The thing is that you're not going to get to any, you know, we don't get to any competitions. That's the thing.
Well, the funny thing was when they...
The best chance of winning something was when Roy Keane decided to fuck off because he didn't want to have fish and chips.
Yeah.
He said to Mick McCarthy, "You're fucking joking." And he, fish and chips every fucking day. And he just told Mick McCarthy, I think he called him a twat actually. Then he fucked off home and walked his dogs.
Walked his dogs, I remember that. But I remember 94, the played in America, didn't they?
Yeah.
And that was when.
Was that John Aldridge?
John Aldridge, they couldn't get him on the pitch.
Yeah, he was furious that day, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was. It came over loud and clear on the on. Their mics worked.
he was really effing and jeffing.
He was effing and jeffing, and Big Jack, and you know, but I think that's great because you don't if you're an Irish supporter, you're not expecting anything. The players, you know, there aren't many players that are superstars in the Irish setup, and they're all just pulling in the same direction and having a go, aren't they? It feels like you do that.
Every year we kind of, when we do watch these competitions, watching the like of Scotland and Wales perform and they get to maybe a later stage in the competition, you almost root for them, don't you? Because of that underdog. Maybe the fact that the England side, on paper, we are probably the best team in the competition. And I feel like every year we look at it and go, all of these players are great individually, but is it just the fact the rivalry is so strong that when they all come together to try and work it out, you know, they got the likes of Jordan Henderson barking at them, telling Phil Foden to press a little bit harder. Phil Foden's like, who the fuck are you?
Yeah, you're not Rodri, are you?
You're not Rodri. No, you're not Rodri. You know, Pep's called you a cunt to your face many times. You know, I don't understand why you're telling me what to do. Maybe that's it.
Yeah. And when you think about, like, going back to when we were kids, Connor, and the fact that the England team was full of Chelsea, Manchester United, Arsenal bits and pieces.
Yeah.
You never wanted to root for any of them. And also you kind of thought that the reason why England lost a lot of these was because Alex Ferguson basically said, you're not mates with any of these bastards. You know, they're going to kill you later on in the season. So make sure you come back and make sure you're fit or don't go.
Best thing that came from that era is Ant Dex music, I guess, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're on the ball, of which I can probably rattle off the whole of the team. But maybe.
Yeah, what were the lyrics of that then?
You know, stick around for our summer coverage and maybe I'll bring that one out of the wheelhouse. What we were supposed to talk about was the running, and just as we sort of wrap things up, I guess, I think in the next week or two, Dave, Johnny and I will be talking about the individual teams that are involved in the running a bit more thoroughly. But from a Liverpool perspective, Brighton's the next game, Manchester City play against Arsenal at the Etihad. It's going to really come quite thick and fast when the Premier League starts back up again. And with those fixtures in mind, you probably think that knowing that there's about 10 games left of the rest of the season, it's going to be all still to play for. And the fact that there are three teams still in it at the top is great for the competition. But from a Liverpool perspective, what are we sort of thinking going into that?
I'm still optimistic. I'm still feeling like, you know, there's some good things that could potentially come. Feel like we've probably got the better run of fixtures, I think. Playing United again, although I imagine there's a lot of Liverpool supporters saying, oh my God, I don't want to do that. I feel like, you know, their time's the charm maybe this year. And I'm not sure out of the top six, how many we've got Spurs left to play.
And
maybe, well, United's part of the traditional top six, I guess. You know, other than those two, we've got no one else, have we?
We've got Aston Villa.
We've got Aston Villa. And is that, that's
pretty much
that's
it.
That's away, isn't it?
Our away fixtures do seem quite hard. We also have a trip to Goodison that's on the...
Not too worried about Everton.
And the way that it's sort of being structured, it says that apparently the only way that they're going to be squeezing in the derby in the season, they're going to apparently work out during the international break, is it'll be the penultimate game of the season. So it could all set itself up for the fact that Liverpool could lose the league and keep Everton up in the penultimate game of the season, which... I don't like the sound of
it. No, I don't like the sound of it.
But with all that in mind, how do you fancy the running?
Well, one thing has to happen, and then it's all in our hands. So either City beat Arsenal or it's a draw.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm right, aren't I? Mathematically, if we win every game, it doesn't matter what they do.
Exactly.
So that's because we had a crap season last season. This season was supposed to be getting stable. We're not in that mindset of we're going to win every game. But just put your mind back to when we nearly won the league a couple of times, and when we won the league, we'd be thinking we'll go on a 10 game. Run here. And I think that's what we have to get our mindset into. You know, the opposition then becomes irrelevant. You're just going to win them. And we as a family always talk about that Villa game, don't we? That was when it just turned like that. If we hadn't won that, it wouldn't have been, anything could have happened. And we were, 1-0 down with 10 minutes to go. And then Robbo and Mane scored. And it felt as though that was when it turned. I don't think we've had that turning point yet, but we will. I must admit, until yesterday, and I thought the wind was in our sails, and it didn't matter who you put in front of us. We were just going to find a way of winning. And I think yesterday might be either a good, it could be a good or a bad thing.
Yeah,
it could be good that you've gone lucky playing with them there. You should have just got the result and gone home. Or it could be, oh crap, we're not immortal. We in the way we thought we were. So I think I'm quite positive about it, but it isn't. It's going to be so tense, isn't it?
We don't enjoy this, do we? Watching it, I feel like, you know, the season where we did win it, I think we got to about three quarters into it, and we said this is unenjoyable. And I can feel, you know, unless you're blowing teams out the water, which no one's doing anymore, Manchester City and us have made this so the competition's almost fair every year. And I think every other team is now getting better and better, which makes the competition like this. It's entertaining. You know, if you're a fly on the wall, you have no loyalty to any club. It's the most entertaining thing to watch, isn't it? Because it is every game. It is really interesting. But it is difficult. It's really unenjoyable. You know, I think for me, when you said there about the turning point, I think that Forest game, Nunes scoring that late goal, that felt like the turning point for me. Would have won yesterday, I think that for me would still resonate as the turning point in this season, where it's really thought, we've just got luck. We've got...
You're right.
That, you know...
Especially considering that when you look back at this last month or so, the amount of injuries and where Liverpool have been, we didn't expect to come out with the amount of wins that we got out of this last month. If you'd have said you were going to drop points against Manchester City and lose a cup game, that was going to be the only ways that you were going to drop any sort of form, you'd have probably said at the start of the month, probably take that, you know. Yeah. It's just unfortunate the manner in which both of those happened, with the Man City one, which I'm still reeling from, because yeah. I still think that we should have got a penalty.
Yeah.
And also the fact that the Manchester United one was effectively in our hands. But when you think about the way that we've sort of progressed this year, I've got to, you know, be a bit sort of level-headed and just say, you know what? If we come out of this with just winning one cup, yes, it'll be a bit disappointing, but we didn't really think we were going to come out of anything getting anywhere near that at the start of the season.
Main mission was Champions League this season, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, and it's just all been the context of Klopp leaving that has brought all of this. And it's probably made a lot of Manchester United fans a lot happier, but, you know, where are you going to end up at the end of the season? We will soon see.
Yeah.
We don't have Dave or Johnny in the room, and normally at the end of the show we do a bit of a wrap up with regards to Fantasy League, and it just so happens that Connor and I are in a Fantasy League together.
I got 0 points this week. No, none of my players played. I didn't want a wild card, a team in that would have played, so I did nothing, and I feel good about that. My position in the league has remained firm at sixth, actually fifth, because there is a person above me who's not paying, so he's not playing.
So, and I got all of 12 points for using my free hit, so it was an utter waste.
I saw lots of people use free hits, and I saw only one or two of them get over 20 points, which made me really happy, because it was a complete waste.
Yeah, I was going to put Chris Wood in my team as well, and then at the last minute, I just thought to myself, oh no, go with what's sensible and put Morris in. Of course, Luton just didn't do very well at the weekend, so it is what it is. But Dave's still miles ahead in our one, and Colin and I are sort of duking it out in the one that we sort of have. I think we're sort of in like fifth, sixth.
Yeah, we are fifth, sixth, seventh. That's kind of where we're hovering around. There looks to be a clear winner in our league. The new lad who joined in the last day before it closed has run away with it, and it's clear why, you know, he joined so late, because we would have realised he's quite a good player. And when I met him last, we went when we watched the final the other week, he was there, Maka was there, and I asked him, and he went, oh, I am good, but, you know, I just kind of wing it most weeks. He doesn't fucking wing
it. What a bastard. That's what makes it even worse. The fact that he's saying, oh yeah, I just, you know.
He doesn't wing it.
I'm just such a natural.
I did accuse him of potentially following Twitter formulas, and he brushed it off and said, no, I don't do that. I just look what's good. You know, and that's obviously impossible, because you can't predict the future. So who knows? But yeah. I don't see us. Neither of us are going to win it this year, and it's just duking out. How are you doing in your league with there?
It's just a case of, well, we said at the start of the season that we're going to have a forfeit for the one who comes last out of Dave, Johnny, and I. And Johnny, when he went on a holiday to Asia, decided that he just wasn't going to do it, and he's now in the position where, if he does lose, we said at the start of the season that the loser would jump in the Mersey, but you can't jump in the Mersey.
No, you can't jump in the Mersey. I do not recommend that for any of the listeners.
The only way that we've worked out that you could do it is by hiring a kayak and capsizing yourself, but that sounds like a bit of an effort just to go for a forfeit. We also said a possible full kit wanker on the last game of the season, but
that'd be quite funny.
Yeah.
Or David, if Dave
loses. But Dave's not going to lose. He's not going to lose.
But if he did lose, he could order a hot dog with all of the additionals on at the game, since we know he doesn't like a hot dog. He loves a plain hot dog, is from my...
See, Dave, if you're listening, it's becoming a bit of a trend now. People know about all your picky, you know, you've got to...
Well, it's not picky, it's choice, isn't it? But at the end of the day, you know, it would be funny to have him try something maybe a little bit different, and maybe, you know, I think we all agree stuff on hot dogs are nice, you know, not just plain. Dave,
Shankly pie, maybe.
Shankly pie, yeah. A Scouse pie, yeah.
You're right there, Dad.
Yes. So it just went from, like, it sounded, if you just took that segment there when you said about jumping in the Mersey and doing capsizing a kayak and only eating hot dogs, it sounded like you were a suicide cult.
Truth. trigger warning for anyone who is in a suicide cult. We're really sorry about that.
And this is the sort of quality broadcasting that you get from View from the Terraces from the semi-detached. Well, it's been a pleasure having you guys on the show. Thanks, Dad. Thanks, Connor, for coming on.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
We'll be back with more stuff during the run-in. I think that this weekend we mightn't have a show. So in which case, we will be back next week for a bit more of View from the Terraces, maybe with the normal style of panel. But would love to have you guys back on again. And we'll speak to you soon. See you later, guys.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers.